This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We start with a quick programming note. We had expected to interview economist Gene Sperling, who served in both the administrations of Presidents Obama and Clinton, about his new book, Economic Dignity. We had promoted that interview online and on air, but Mr. Sperling canceled our interview this morning, and we'll look into rescheduling that. But now on with the show. The future of the Cincinnati streetcar's ridership opportunities appears to be uncertain now, but a recent analysis found that $1 billion in investment has been made within 1,000 feet of that streetcar line since ground broke on it in 2012. That analysis was conducted by local real estate and planning firm Urban Fast Forward. So joining us to talk about that is that firm's senior project executive, John Young. He's on the phone with us. John, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. A little later on in the program, we're going to be joined by local transit activist John Schneider as we talk more broadly about the streetcar, and we want to hear from you as well. So give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email your thoughts to talk@wvxu.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets about what you want to see in the future for the streetcar, whether it's an extension or a shutdown. Contact us. So, John, tell us about this study. This is pretty interesting. $1 billion is a pretty significant number. I don't think it's the first time we've heard a reference to that amount being invested around it, but this suggests that $1 billion in investment since 2012 within 1,000 feet of the streetcar line. Talk about how your firm, Urban Fast Forward, went about collecting that.
Right, Michael. So we had been kind of, over last year, there was a lot of discussion, actually over the last couple of years, about what that economic impact value is. And you know that there have been a couple of independent analyses, most notably from the Cincinnati Business Courier, which tracked some of the major projects along the streetcar line. I kind of got tired of the opaqueness of the debate, so to speak, last summer. I was like, if we can get some of the actual building permit information from projects along the line, then we would be able to actually come down to within the cent as to the amount of investment over a specific time period. So I went on Cincy Insights, which is the Cincinnati data portal for all of information from like traffic accidents to like the building permits and to other things as well. And I just exported all the information, and we've been working for the last 7 months to compile that information into an online mapping program, GIS, to make some analysis about what is the total investment along the route. So we chose from the day of the streetcar groundbreaking in February of 2012 to the day we pulled the data, which is in July of 2019, the 45202 zip code area, which includes all of downtown and over the Rhine. We got all that permit information compiled together. It took a lot of work to kind of attach everything to properties so we can put the information into the map. And then the map spit out the number, which is $1,120,373,354.
Right down to the cent. Again, right $1,120,373,353.34, according to this report from Urban Fast Forward.
Right.
And John Young, who is a senior project executive with that firm, said that he pulled information to look at this. But let's be clear, that information, according to the news release from your firm announcing these findings, thousands of permit records to develop this database,
right,
all within that 45202 zip code. And you pulled those for the first time in July of last year, so we're a year later. Talk about that work.
Yeah, so we had over 13,000 permits in that date, in that time range, in 45202. And so we did a first pass and kind of saying, okay, well, you know, does this work? Where you can join these parcel IDs together, the property information to the map, does this work? It did. However, if you are familiar with construction projects, a developer or a contractor or a homeowner or will take out multiple permits for plumbing or electric or for you know, any number of things. So you have 5 permits for one property and you need to combine them all together. So we kind of did the heavy lifting, the data analysis part, or the combing through the data part, was basically take these common permits and compress them into a single data entry point. So we have a guy on our team, Phil, might be listening, who did a lot of that work, and I'm very appreciative of his Excel genius, so to speak. So So we got the numbers of records down from 13,000 to 1,500, and then we put it into the mapping database in ArcGIS, and we got about 95% of our matches. So we're still looking at about 80 or so records to match back up again. But the total value for all the permits in 405202 was $1.35 billion. So it's still a lot of money that flowed into downtown Cincinnati over the last 8 years. We did some basic comparative analysis by taking basically ring buffers around the streetcar stops and looking at, you know, investment in total of 405202 and then an investment within 1,000 feet of the streetcar stop. And the reason why we picked 1,000 feet was because the initial analysis done by in 2007 by HDR said that within 1,000 feet there would be $378.9 million in economic value by the year 2042. So we're looking at permit data investment. And I do want to say something about the permit valuations, that this is not some arbitrary number that we came up with. This is the number that contractors and developers put on their building permits for the valuation of the projects in order to get a permit approval. And the permit approvals in most municipalities is that if you have you have to estimate the value of your project in order to get the value of permit fee to get the permit. So it's traditionally in the nature of developers and contractors to be conservative with those estimates. So we're looking at conservative estimates done by contractors for structural or mechanical style improvement.
Yeah, I want to be clear on that. Yeah, we're not talking about all this investment does not necessarily mean it's a big building. It could mean a big building, but you went down to, I guess, the smallest possible improvements.
Right. If you are putting a new sign up for a business, if you are putting in HVAC, if you're adding a new kitchen or bathroom, if you're doing structural work, whether it be stabilization or rehab, and you got a permit for that, that's what's in here. But we didn't include superficial things that don't require a permit. Well, oftentimes, if you're painting a building or if you're remodeling, if you're you're changing out the cabinets in your kitchen or you're retiling a floor or something like that, that's not included in these counts. So there's actually a bit of a missing value that we can't get because those are just unmeasurable with the amount of information that we have access to. So I think this number is a base, quite honestly.
And we're talking with John Young. He is a senior project executive at the firm Urban Fast Forward. They recently released a report that shows more than $1.1 billion in investment within 1,000 feet of the Cincinnati streetcar system since ground broke on that project back in 2012. And so, John, let me ask you, what are we to draw from this? Because what it looks like on paper right now is that the streetcar may possibly be a catalyst for economic development, but it's not seeing the type of success that I think some people have hoped for as a transit opportunity.
Right. The streetcar was developed as an economic development tool, but it's also a mobility system. It's also, I think, the idea of it being a transportation system, unfortunately, was lowered down a bit during the debates on to build it, but it is essentially a transit. It's a pedestrian circulator. So it's designed to be somewhat slower moving, have more stops. It does run in the right of way, which is always a bit of an issue. There are some pragmatic opportunities the city can take to make the streetcar more reliable and to speed up operations. Really, this is this is a system that was built to light rail standards. This is not Portland streetcar standards. This is Portland MAX standards to be part of a larger system. And I think when we talk about, when I asked people on the streetcar when it was open, what do you think about this? The number one thing is it doesn't go far enough. So I think transportation is becoming more of the opportunity for the streetcar. I think economic development, it's hard to say what percentage of this value is attributed to the streetcar. And if you look at the study, there are a number of caveats that I list out, primarily one being, 3CDC has been investing in Over the Rhine and downtown since 2003. We have developments at the banks. We have renovation projects at Music Hall. All of those, factor into this number. But I do believe the streetcar is a value add on top of some of those projects.
So would you, I mean, can we suggest then that maybe some of this investment, if it is related to the streetcar, is still somewhat speculative since the goal, even when it was originally constructed, was to have a longer route?
Right. So I think it is speculative in the sense that, like, people saw the investment in the streetcar and they said, this is something that, this is a sign, a momentum driver sign, that things are changing in over the Rhine and in downtown. So I think that was a signal to the development community, both in Cincinnati and without Cincinnati, regional developers that are also coming into Cincinnati, it's a better return on investment to invest along something where there's been a significant project that is that is built. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, you looked through thousands of permits before whittling it down to, I guess, 1,500, you said, to create this figure, this $1.1 billion investment around the streetcar within 1,000 feet of it anyway. I imagine that the permits didn't necessarily say we're doing this because of the streetcar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
How do we connect those dots?
So that's one of the things that our second phase of our analysis is going to take a look at, is that we're going to select some areas that are outside of the 1,000-foot buffer in the 45202 zip code and compare them to parts of the streetcar system. So we, with our mapping software, we can go stop by stop and kind of take one or two stops that are in parallel maybe and do a comparative analysis of those projects. I would try to look at, I think our parameters for that right now is look at stops that are a little bit further away from obvious amenities like Mountain Square or the banks or Finley Market. However, one thing when the planning of the streetcar we did very well is we connected a lot of cultural amenities together. So there is a lot of assets already along this system that's in place. I think those are additional demand drivers.
And the second research phase that your firm, Urban Fast Forward, is conducting, according to your news release, you hope to have this out by December of this year.
Right, yeah.
So is there any concern about what the numbers might show as it relates to COVID, since that has had a little bit of an impact on some development opportunities?
So our analysis is pre-COVID.
Okay, so this is the same data basically from the first phase.
Right, yes. And I kind of would be interested in getting the data from July to, like, March to kind of close it out to pre-lockdown. But I think when we look at development trends, and our firm as a commercial real estate urban planning firm has had our hand on the pulse, so to speak, of some of what the impacts of COVID will be, we actually just finished doing a pretty good talk about retail and the transition of retail in this environment. And one of the things that we've discovered is with retail, as much as any other, as all the other trends, is that there's something called trend acceleration that's happening, which means that some of the things that have already been occurring are going to accelerate. So to briefly branch off for a second to, like, big box stores, we're looking at big box retail is declining. But it was declining before, and the nature of retail has been evolving, changing out of the big box model. So going back to the streetcar, our trends, the trend lines that we've been looking at right now is that people want to live in what's called a 15-minute community, which is a place where you can live, a very welcome place, kind of like Bellevue, Kentucky, we talked about earlier, where you can walk within 15 minutes and get all the amenities you can. Downtown over the Rhine is the obvious 15-minute community, one of the two obvious 15-minute communities in this region. And the streetcar is something that binds all that to get that stuff together. So this is really a value modifier on top of trend lines that are already starting to kind of be realized over time. And COVID has started to highlight the fact that people want, with the ability to have remote work, people have more options to choose where they want to live. And they're going to want to live in a place where they have these types of amenities that are close by, that are within walking distance, and you don't need a car for. And that's downtown and over the Rhine.
We're talking with John Young, a senior project executive with Urban Fast Forward, and we're talking about the new analysis conducted by that firm that shows more than $1.1 billion in investment since 2012 within 1,000 feet of the streetcar line. I'll also note that John referenced that we were talking about Bellevue. We did that as we were doing some sound checks before we went on the air, but I'm glad you brought it up because we are going to talk a little bit later on about potential extensions for the streetcar. And we saw in the recent release from the Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana Regional Council of Governments, better known as OKI, that there is at least a plan or an idea that it could be extended into northern Kentucky, for example, within that important regional plan. Whether or not that happens, not sure. But speaking of areas outside of 1,000 feet of the streetcar, across the river, further out into the suburbs, we're seeing development take off across the region. I mean, at least we were before the economy started to slow down. Covington, Newport, Bellevue, certainly, and then the suburbs, Liberty Township, Anderson Township, Florence, huge development. Is there a way, well, I suppose the answer to that question is yes, but has there been any analysis on the amount of investment in those places which are not connected to the streetcar? And is that worth considering here as we pitch the streetcar as an economic catalyst?
Well, I think it's interesting. I was just had mulling over my head over the last couple of days regards to this conversation. I would be interested in tracking with issue 7 passing in Hamilton County if a kind of a bus rapid transit route were to be installed along Reading Road or Glenway or whatever they're proposing, if we can track some of that investment as well. Citywide, you know, we have, you know, people oftentimes talk about the tax statements the city gives out. That's a citywide kind of program. Has been really helpful. Other communities have different tools for building successful communities. You know, there's the four neighborhoods in Cincinnati where they adopted the form-based code, which is a different type of zoning code, have seen some relative investment since that adoption has taken place. So, you know, there are different economic development tools that cities and counties and other municipalities can employ. But one of the most impactful ones is to have some level of infrastructure investment in those neighborhoods. So, you know, I think about Madisonville, which, you know, has the MedPace campus right now, and that was there was a lot of investment that was done up there in the road infrastructure and some other places along, like as you mentioned before, we're looking at Covington and Florence and some of these other places where there has been some measure of investment, but the scale of investments is very different, and it's been harder to make those investments. I think with downtown and over the Rhine, where the streetcars are located right now, we're seeing that it's more of a sure thing, and that developers are very risk averse. They like to have some, they're very conservative in the way that they look at what where to invest their money, and I think that is something that plays out across the region with that.
And we're going to get to your phone calls at 513-419-7100, your emails at talk@wvxu.org. And we've got a lot of comments on social media that we're going to share with you. We'll continue the streetcar conversation with John Young, and we'll also be joined by local transit activist John Schneider. You might know how he feels about this. His Twitter handle is @ProStreetcar. So we'll talk more broadly about the current status of the streetcar and the future of it. Please join us. And a little later on in the show, we're going to be talking with new host of NPR's 1A, Jen White. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I put out a question on Twitter just this morning asking you, what do you want to see in the future as it relates to the streetcar in Cincinnati? Maybe you want to see an extension in the city or across the river in northern Kentucky. Maybe you have some other observations about it. And we got a lot of comments about this. David Chapeldan wrote that Covington would be an option. Carrie responded, it needs to be more efficient and frequent by identifying a long-term funding source to make its fare free, and finally giving it signal priority. Long-term needs to be in a protected lane separated by a concrete berm. Greg Harris wrote, it would be nice to see a more seamless integration between NKY communities and with Cincinnati's core, especially if it could be done in a way that connects with CVG I-75 light rail. Matt Frey wrote, extended up to Clifton. Jason Riffle told us at least up to Clifton and Northside, would love it to expand further to be able to get all around the city on it or on another rail service. Luke Sillies wrote us, full off-street light rail aside, the streetcar should improve mobility between key urban centers, Covington, Newport, Uptown, Walnut Hills, Northside, and Price Hill. And we did get some detractors as well. The Cincy Buckeye tweeted at us, Cincinnati is not big enough and doesn't have the population density to have a bigger rail footprint. Then there is no demand for it either. Let's continue our conversation now about the streetcar, its current state, its investment that has occurred around it, and what its future might look like. We're joined by Urban Fast Forward Senior Project Executive John Young. John, thank you for staying with us.
Thanks for having me. On again.
Of course. And we are now also joined on the phone by local transit activist John Schneider. John Schneider, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Let me throw a question over to you first before we get to the phone lines where we have some questions. What is the state of the streetcar currently? I know you've been a champion of this type of transit opportunity for a long time, but what's the state of things now as you see it?
Well, right now it's running empty 3 days a week around the city so that we're not in default of our $45 million federal grant. But a lot of people don't realize how much the streetcar has improved in the last 2 years. You haven't read an Inquirer article about the streetcars closing down because they haven't due to mechanical issues. Those are all fixed now. Ridership in 2019 was up by 12% over 2018. That's faster than any bus route in the region grew. Ridership in the first 2 months of 2020 before the mayor closed it down was up by 21% over the same months last year. And that ridership is being driven by weekday ridership. Almost two-thirds of the gain was in weekday ridership. And why that's a good sign is it means the people who have to really depend on, not the tourists, not the people coming in and going to the parks on weekends, but the people who have to get to work and get to Kroger and pick up a child at the babysitter, I mean, whatever, it means that they can count on it more, and that was not the case until about, a year and a half or so ago, but it's become very reliable. The city is about halfway through retiming these signals. I think that works on hold right now, that will speed it through downtown even faster. So it's I think people are still looking at the 2016-2018 playbook on the streetcar, and the fact is, it's a different project now. It's getting close to what we thought it should be.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We'll go to the phones now. Steve is on the line. Hi, Steve. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I've read Mr. Young's report, and I would urge everyone to read it, and especially go to the end where the caveats are, that where he qualifies all of the data that he's accumulated, and he specifically refers to the preliminary conclusions are that the streetcar project would positively impact development along the route, though it cannot firmly conclude to what degree the streetcar played in the role of development. That's observation number one. Observation number two, you never hear in these studies, you hear about development, but how much money is that bringing to the city treasury and to increase tax revenue?
All right, Steve.
It's never mentioned.
Thank you
Third
for...
Point I'd like to make,
please, go ahead quickly.
Is... The Kansas City system is always held up as the gold standard compared to us. Every streetcar system in the United States is funded with a special taxing district except one, Cincinnati. And that is their obstacle, and that's their opportunity to fix this.
All right, Steve, we appreciate that perspective, and I'll give John Young a chance, since both of our guests on the phone are named John. John Young, you heard from Steve there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so one of the things that we considered, and this is kind of this report, the study, is something we're doing, you know, kind of in our spare time at our office, in between other projects. So we would definitely be interested in doing a wider analysis that would get a little closer to the bottom of what Steve is talking about. But one of the things the Business Courier attempted to do in their analysis was to do a survey of developers along the line to ask them basically, did the streetcar factor into your development, which I think is a piece that we would like to incorporate if the study were to be expanded upon. You know, as far as the tax coffers, I think one of the things that we're looking at, of course, is the main source of income right now is income tax. So if you're creating jobs, construction jobs, restaurant jobs, other service jobs, and office jobs along transportation investments, that is an increase in city tax revenue. Tax abatements, of course, are always kind of the hot ticket kind of controversy right now, and I think that's something that the city really should look at reforming on. But, you know, we still get some level of tax revenue and property tax revenue as it is in the city budget right now. We don't collect more than, I believe, $29 million a year, so it's kind of a moot point. But we would like to explore that further if we got funding or had a bit more data access and time on our hands, for sure.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. Let's go to Jared now. Hi, Jared. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yes, I had a question regarding high-speed rail. Is the streetcar equipped to handle if we end up getting high-speed rail, could it be used as a one-off to, like, you could get onto the streetcar through the high-speed rail, or how would that look, I guess, in terms of planning that and going forward with high-speed rail?
All right, Jared, thanks so much for your question. Let me throw that over to John Schneider. John, occasionally we do see a map on social media that shows what high-speed rail across the country could look like, and Cincinnati and Louisville, Indianapolis are all part of that and excites a lot of people. What's the response to that question from Jared?
Well, we're actually fairly well equipped to accommodate high-speed rail if and when it comes. The Riverfront Transit Center, which is seldom used now, was designed to accommodate any type of rail that operates in the United States. You know, and so you would have the streetcar stopping right above it on Second Street. You would go down on a stairway or an elevator, and the high-speed rail would be there. And people have mapped out a route to get it to Chicago. And I think that's one of the corridors, certainly not the most prominent corridor that the people are studying, but that would, I think, be a fairly viable route. You could also berth the trains there and take them to Dayton, Columbus, and to Cleveland. So when that day comes, and it's not out of the question that whenever it does come, we have already built a high-speed rail station in downtown Cincinnati.
And to be clear, though, I think just to clarify the question, the streetcar system would not necessarily be part of the high-speed system, of course, but it would possibly connect you to it?
Mostly high-speed rail, oftentimes when it gets out of the, say it gets out of the transit center, would probably be on elevated trestles to get out of more dense areas of town. It is true that the standard gauge of rail, 4 feet, 8.5 inches, is used almost everywhere around the world except the former Soviet Union. So you theoretically could put high-speed trains on the rail and they'd fit. But that trackway for high speeds, 200-mile-an-hour speeds, is much more sophisticated than what we're having on downtown streets in terms of the grade and sound buffering and a whole bunch of things like that. So no, it would be a whole new track, but the streetcar would integrate very well with it.
Let's go back to the phones now. We have Spencer on the line. Hi, Spencer. What's your question or comment?
Seeing where the streetcar is now, I always thought it would be a good idea, rather than building these large parking structures for FC Cincinnati, if we extended the track from where it turns at Washington Park over to FC Cincinnati and then took it to Union Terminal, you would allow for parking at Union Terminal, which would be a funding for Union Terminal. And then on top of that, it would allow for people to go from Union Terminal to downtown Cincinnati and connect it. And then even to tie it into the long, the high-speed rail, then we'd even have another access point that already has rails on it that would allow it. I wanted to know the thoughts on doing something of that nature.
That's great timing on your question, Spencer. And John, I think that's the sort of what we were talking about, right? Was Union Terminal the downtown establishment you were talking about in terms of high-speed rail access?
Which John? John Schneider or John Young?
How about Schneider?
Okay, well, in terms of saying the streetcar, I don't think people realize how well set up we are for this. The streetcar ends now just north of Findlay Market. It could be extended for a half mile up Elm and Ray Streets to McMicken to Central Parkway. Once you get to Central Parkway, and there's a lot of development potential there along the Mickan that I think is going to be very hard to do probably without a streetcar. But once you get to Central Parkway, you have the ability to go to Northside. You have the ability to go on Central Parkway to the Western Hills Viaduct. You also have the ability to get into the West End from there. You could cross onto Dalton Street, and then I wouldn't presume to tell anyone in that neighborhood where it should go to, but it clearly has a clear path to get into the West End where the streets are fairly wide, and we do have a new stadium going up there. And so that's going to be an interesting discussion probably in a couple of years as to where you might think about extending this. In addition to the obvious candidates of extending it to the University of Cincinnati and to Newport, I think there's going to be some interesting things starting to well up about how people might expand it. Clearly, the easiest expansion of the streetcar today, in my opinion, would be to extend it north and west to Central Parkway to serve that Mohawk area.
I want to expand upon the conversation about Northern Kentucky, and we saw the OKI report come out that, I mean, obviously that does not mean that there's funding for it. It's sort of an estimation of what it would cost possibly to extend the Cincinnati streetcar system into Northern Kentucky via Newport. I want to be clear that we did invite a Newport City Commissioner who also serves on the OKI Board of Directors to come on the program. She declined. I think that speaks to tepid support for the idea. There's enthusiasm for it from a policy perspective, I've noticed, but not so much from a public relations perspective. So John Schneider and John Young, we'll start with you, Schneider, and then go over to John. What do you think the prospects really are for extending it, not just uptown, which was the next logical decision, but across the Ohio?
Well, they have a straight shot. I mean, it from the Great American Ballpark down the ramp, past the Coliseum, and across the bridge, the newer bridge there, right into the area of heavy investment, including the music venue that's under construction right now. So it would be a fairly direct line to build. One fortunate thing about the bridge taking up probably almost half the distance you'd have to travel would be there are no utilities to move on the bridge. I imagine it could be done fairly inexpensively. Again, I don't presume that it's a good investment or that Newport has the ability to pay for it or anything like that. But just from someone who knows about streetcars and light rail, that's a pretty logical place for it to go.
And John Young, you have some professional experience on the other side of the river. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the tank operates the South Bank Shuttle right now. And they were proposing, I'm not exactly sure where this is right now, turn the number 12 or part of the number 12, include part of the number 12 bus route, which runs into Bellevue and Dayton, into a South Bank Shuttle route, and they would run a larger bus over that, which would then change the South Bank Shuttle route. And that was really, you know, the South Bank Shuttle had been intended to be their pedestrian, their kind of connector to downtown and the north and the river cities. You can see that I've ridden the South Bank Shuttle plenty of times. It's a bit of a rough ride. I still feel like it's very convenient to get over to the other side of the river. However, you haven't seen a whole lot of development impact with the South Bank Shuttle. And the route has been changed a couple of times. It used to run over the suspension bridge and then didn't run over the suspension bridge. Now it runs over the suspension bridge again. And I cannot say suspension bridge five times in a row. I'm sorry about that. But when you run the streetcar over to a place like Northern Kentucky or Newport, and you have the Ovation Project, that could be a catalytic game changer. I would say also through Covington, with the IRS site coming online as a development area and Main Street kind of picking up, you know, connecting those things into the Cincinnati system would actually be a tremendous value add. We're looking at trend line shifting, people driving less, people wanting to be stuck in traffic less, people wanting to have more walkable, bikeable mobility, and the streetcar expansion in Northern Kentucky would definitely increase opportunities for Northern Kentucky cities like Covington and Newport to plug into downtown Cincinnati.
Okay, so our next interview is recorded, which means I have a hard stop and we are right at it so that we can get that on without being interrupted by fresh air. John Schneider, John Young, thanks to both of you for being with us. We're going to pick up this conversation again. Thanks to the callers we couldn't get to. Hope to talk to you all again soon. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks.
Thank you.